Hey, KIDE crew, welcome back to the Jill Lynn Thomas Show on this Thought Leader Thursday. Before the break, I was sharing with you my conversation with Robin Marr. She is the executive director at the Death Penalty Information Center out of Washington, D.C. I reached out to her today because I knew that we were going to be getting a verdict in the Daybell case very soon. And now here it is. And the death penalty is on the table. So let me share more of my conversation with Robin Marr. You know, Robin, we've also heard in recent years of cases where it's believed that somebody is not guilty, and yet they come within days or hours of an execution.
Well, that's right, too, and that's one of the major issues that people have pointed to over the years when they oppose the death penalty. They say, look, we're not getting it right. We are making mistakes, and for many of these cases, we're not discovering those mistakes until they are very, very close to being executed. You know, the other part of this that I think is deserving of some attention is that people who have been in prison sentenced to death have been there for sometimes many decades, and have been completely rehabilitated. They're completely different people than they were when they were convicted of a crime. Mr. Creech, for example, Thomas Creech is one of those people, spent, you know, decades on death row in Idaho before there was an attempt to execute him. That was one of the botched executions most recently. That failed because the team was unable to access a vein in Mr. Creech. But I guess it's another question, really, for the public to think about, which is, you know, do we want to punish people for something they did 40 years ago when they are no longer the same people? They've maybe rehabilitated, maybe, you know, asked for forgiveness, acknowledged their responsibility, taken responsibility for their crimes. Is it still something that we think is necessary to do as a society? Again, these are great questions for voters to think about when they think about whether they support the death penalty.
Exactly. And that Thomas Creech case really did prompt a lot of conversation here in the state, but not just here. I mean, these kinds of cases are drawing a lot of attention. I want to turn a little attention to the Daybell case as that's on the table. In your work, do you have experiences where you've come to understand that when the death penalty is on the table, it puts a higher burden on the jury?
You know, that's a great question. And we've certainly learned a lot more in recent years about the collateral consequences of the death penalty, not only for certainly the defendant, but for everybody the death penalty touches, including jurors. These are really often very difficult cases. They're violent. They are. It's painful for jurors to have to sit through the trauma of watching a family suffer over the death of a loved one, and make these painful decisions about whether this person is guilty or not. But that's really just the beginning. Then they have to decide whether that defendant deserves to die. And we ask jurors to make a reasoned moral decision about that. And it really is asking them to bring their own personal conscience into the conversation, into that decision-making process, and to look within themselves and decide whether this is the right answer for this crime. And that's a painful, very difficult, very stressful decision to have to make. And we know from interviewing jurors after these trials that this is a decision that stays with many of them for years and even decades after they make it. So this use of the death penalty, we have to understand this is not just about an individual. This is about a community and how they are affected by both the crime and by what they identify as the answer to the crime, and then ultimately what it's going to feel like when they have to invest these resources, this time, these taxpayer resources into an execution.
That's exactly what was on my mind as I asked that question. I was thinking, this has got to be something that there's much more to than meets the eye. I can only imagine that these jurors carry that with them. What a heavy burden, and a burden that just doesn't go away. Is there a particular story maybe that stands out in your mind as you've interviewed jurors over the years?
Yeah, maybe not one in particular. I will say that jurors, when they are interviewed later, after many years, when the person they have sentenced to death is to be executed, it's not uncommon for some of those jurors to say, I've changed my mind. I don't think this is the right answer anymore because I didn't have all the information or I thought about it and I made a decision maybe in haste or for some other reason. But it's not unusual for jurors to later say, we've changed our mind and we think it's fine for this person to just die in prison for his crime, that's punishment enough. We also know that, you know, family members feel differently about the death penalty now. Even in the heat of the moment when they are feeling, you know, nothing but feelings of revenge and pain and grief, which is understandable, sometimes years removed from the crime, they can also make peace with the fact that this person doesn't have to be executed in order to bring them the peace they so desperately crave. And so it's interesting to see how feelings evolve, feelings and emotions about this evolve over time as we get more information or get a little bit removed from the event itself.
Well, it's such important work that you're doing. And I think it just kind of hits to the heart of the matter that sometimes there are these emotional knee-jerk reactions. The crime is so horrible, and everybody is looking to send a strong message. And in talking with you, there is certainly so much more to all of this than initially meets the eye.
Yeah, 100% about that. I mean, these are complicated cases, and taking nothing away from the pain of violent crime, which understandably really shakes up a community when you see something like that happen. But the question really about whether someone should be executed as a consequence of that is in an entirely different category. And, I will be interested to see how this trial comes out, and I certainly have a lot of feelings of empathy for the jury that's going to have to go through the next part of this case trying to decide a sentence.
No doubt about it. This has been a really emotional case. The community here has been captivated, the country and even the world. I mean, there are people traveling from different countries to be in the courtroom because they connected with the loss of these children and this very, very highly publicized case.
Yeah, true enough. And, you know, I think, like, it again, it is a very, very human emotion. You know, speaking of Mr. Creech, I just want to quickly add, in case that this is of interest, that, you know, the trial judge in Mr. Creech's case was one of the people who changed his mind about whether Mr. Creech should be executed. He believed that his sentence should be commuted and that he should spend the rest of his life in prison and not be executed. I mean, that's the kind of example that you see where people can look back on something and say, wow, that was in a particular moment in time, but in retrospect, maybe not the best decision, and I'm at peace with a different one now.
It just speaks to the fact that time really does play into all of this, and transformations certainly happen. Well, Robin Marr, Executive Director of the Death Penalty Information Center, thanks so much for shedding some light today.
Oh, it's been really a pleasure. Thanks very much for getting in touch.
You bet. All right, KID crew, there is more to come. After the break, I am going to share your comments about this unprecedented verdict. Former President Trump found guilty on all 34 counts. We'll be back.